This time on Kawaii Radio, Kyle apologizes. I actually found this out completely accidentally while watching a YouTube video on, like,
completely unrelated.
Yeah, completely unrelated.
Sitting there doom scrolling it, and I go, like, oh no.
Yeah, right. Tifa's watched Scarlet.
There's a random musical number in the middle of it.
Of course there is after Belle.
Don't tell Kenny.
Kenny's not watching it anyway. So. And it's our annual Valentine's Day episode.
Can we just get the box of Captain Crunch that's Oops All Berries, but it's Oops All Panty Shots?
Wi-Fi Radio!
Konnichiwa and welcome. You're listening to Kawaii Radio, the podcast. We dive in the world of anime, manga, all things Japanese otaku culture. I'm Kyle. With me is Aaron. Tifa is over on remote. We've been delayed, but it's the Valentine's Day episode, and we have a stinker for you. So, as always, our Valentine's Day episode and our White Day episode are not a all-ages episode. We still do keep the cussing to a minimum where we can, but the content, should we say, mature themes are involved. So if you are a youngster and you are one of our regular listeners, Soz, parental Goodbye. Guidance recommended.
Have a lovely week. We'll see you in a couple more.
We'll see you in a week. where we'll talk about like a film or something and you'll be fine. This one's a little bit lewd, a little bit weird. And I made a terrible choice. I made everyone watch something awful. It's Agent Aker, which is started in the 90s and then had prequels in the 2000s. And it's directed and produced by Katsuhiko Nishijima, a Japanese animator, storyboardist, and artist known for panty fan service. He's known as the god of panty fan service in some circles. We'll get to more on that shortly. It's a weird one. I don't know if we can recommend watching it, but it's certainly a retrospective on how Japan used to handle its fan service. So Tifa's like, why did you make me watch this, Kyle?
You can listen to our review and then decide from there whether you want to watch it or not.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know if I'd recommend it, but we'll get into that. Anyway, first up, what we've been watching, because it's been a while and we've got some things to tell you about.
I have no idea how old I am or where I came from.
Daddy! Ohayo!
Peg time! I gotta go!
I have to know!
Hooray! I did the thing!
Oni-chan, nani wo miru?
What we're watching.
Alrighty. Oh dear. So, Tifa.
Yes?
We're gonna get you to start off because you went and watched a film in the cinemas.
I did.
It's by... I forgot his name. It's the guy who did...
Girl That Leapt Through Time.
Beast and the Boy. Mirai.
Beast, whatever it's called. Sorry.
I know exactly what you mean. Then he did Belle, which we pretty much said is not a good film. It's just basically Beauty and the Beast with extra steps. And his latest outing is called Scarlet. What was it about and what did you think, Tief?
So basically it's about this kind of no man's land where basically when you die, it doesn't matter what period of time you die in, you all end up in the same place, which I think is an interesting concept. So it's like someone that died in medieval times, they're going to be wandering this wasteland for so long because that's just where they are. And someone that dies like today is going to end up in the same place, basically. So all their spirits are kind of there. And the main character, Scarlet, is trying to escape or find another place or try and figure out something more that's here. And then she finds out that her uncle, who is the king when she died, is like in charge of this area there. So clearly he died at some point as well, which is kind of funny. And that he is saying that he knows like the way to this like heaven, essentially. So you can descend from No Man's Land to heaven, and basically the film is about that. That's kind of the synopsis.
So it's like a purgatory, which doesn't matter when you die, you go to this purgatory if you're not preordained to go to some other place, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and I mean, I do think it's an interesting concept, and them playing around with animation style works for this in some ways. Mm. Like when we see her actual life, because we do see it before she dies and stuff, that's all done in like a traditional hand-drawn watercolor, like painting sort of way, which is really nice. I really liked that. And then when they move into this middle area, it's a little bit more like CG or whatever. And then when you move to, there's another character who's more from the future or today, it's a little bit more akin to like a Genshin Impact style animation. But when they come together in the middle land, they're all the same animation style. So that's the style of that, which is cool. But I feel like they just didn't lean into the story they're trying to tell here, because they're like talking about good and evil and what we do with our lives and all that. And everything's just kind of like, yeah, but like, whatever.
yeah, but everything's fine.
It's so centralist, which is very annoying. Like, that's the number one thing that's annoying about the story is like, oh, okay, so in the very beginning you see that her father, who is the king, gets executed in front of everyone. Slight spoiler alert, gets executed because his brother says that he's a traitor to the kingdom. But I was like, how does that happen? But he's the king, and then he's being executed live in front of everybody in the kingdom, but he's the king, so why can you do that when technically you couldn't, and he could have you executed? And who is he a traitor to? He's a traitor to himself? Like, I don't understand. And then
it's like, he was going to sell out the kingdom. To who? And why do... What, is that a bad thing? Like, tell us what was going on. Like,
and then, so, like, whatever, he gets executed in front of his, like, very young daughter, and then she's like, oh, I'm going to seek revenge, and the uncle becomes king or like whatever, and we fast forward through everything. We fast forward so quickly through that, and then she, like 10 minutes later, goes to enact her revenge, and she dies in a way that's so stupid. I'm like, this is really dumb. How did you? I was like, bro, she's gonna die now.
Yeah.
And then she ends up in this place, and it's, I don't know, there's a random musical number in the middle of it.
Of course there is, after Belle.
Don't tell Kenny.
Kenny's not watching it anyway. So.
They like rip off a lot of, they kind of rip off like a lot of things where it's just kind of like, oh, that place looks exactly like a place where you'd get an extra flask from in Elden Ring, or they're like, this area where the king is at looks like it's like Mordor or something. And there's just a lot of like copycats. The throne room looks exactly like the throne room from Game of Thrones. And I'm like, it's just, you've just like traced. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And when we were watching it as well, my partner was like, is this like AI? Like, what's happening in this scene?
Yeah.
So, which it's not. It's just weirdly some of the animation put together is kind of odd. And apparently it's a retelling of Hamlet, which I don't think is... Yeah, there's a lot of things going on, but nothing actually happens, you know?
And I'm guessing in the end somehow she kills her uncle in the afterlife and gets to heaven.
Kind of, but no, she doesn't actually kill him. He just kind of, like, dies, so, like, there isn't actually anything. And then it's like, oh, she's actually not dead. She's actually alive. She's just petering on the edge, so now you can go back to being alive. And she wakes up and they're like, oh yes, your uncle has died, so now you are the queen, and what is your first degree as the queen? She stands and she's in front of all these people. There's no buildings, they're outside, there's no buildings, and she's just like, I decree that there'll be freedom for everyone and we'll have peace forevermore.
Oh, that's, I thought you were going to say pizza ends. Parties, but like, you know.
But do you know what my favorite reference though is Tweedledum and Tweedledee, and then they both kind of do a like Mario and Luigi jump, and then they go, yahoo.
Oh my God. This just feels like, an emoji movie, like that sort of thing where they're just putting in every meme they can think of. That's bad. Like,
yeah.
What the heck? And then
another spoiler though, like the uncle when he dies, he like kind of disappears into these like particles like Voldemort in Harry Potter at the end. It's the exact same thing.
Oh, God. This is bad.
All of my favorite things from my favorite stories. We're going to put them together. Yep. What do you mean it doesn't work?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's Mamoru Hosoda, as we mentioned before, who did Mariah and a heap of other ones. But it's just ever since he stopped working with his scriptwriter and took over writing the script himself, everything has become bad. That's probably the easiest way to explain it. Like, when he did Summer Wars, Girl Who Leapt Through Time, Mirai, all of those did exceptionally well because he was working with an incredible writer, which was, where is it listed as? It says it was written by Mamoru Hosoda for like Mirai, but that's not true. He's not the only writer. So yeah, like a bit of backpedaling there on it. Satoko Okudura. She's known for writing the screenplays in both live action and anime. Has won multiple Japanese Academy Prizes. Ever since she stopped working with Mamoru Hosoda, it's just gone downhill. And it's because he can't write. Like, I hate to say it, but
like, particular reason why she stopped working with him
I do wonder as well. Like, there's a lot listed here as well. Kiki's Delivery Service, the 2014 live action she was involved in, Wolf Children, Princess and the Pilot, Summer Wars, Kaden, The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, Tenshi, like the old Tenshi, which is also known as Angel Nest in the West. She's done a lot of work, and everything she touches tends to work out really good. She also wrote Wolf Children, the script for it as well. So there you go. Like, a lot of the stuff that he has done really well for Momaru has all been through this lady. And since he took over, like, it's just gone downhill. Like, Mirai was okay, but he wasn't the only writer. Bell was not, and he was the only writer. It's Scarlet,
like, you have an idea. Only writer. But, like, he can come up with an idea, which maybe you can do something with, but he doesn't know how to flesh out his own stories, so it ends up being just, like, nothing. Like, I literally watched a film about nothing. I watched The Lord of the Rings, War of Rohirrim. That was at least an enjoyable experience, and this, like, something was happening there. It might have been simple, but it was something.
Yeah. Like,
is this the movie equivalent of that kid in the interview that's like, did you ever have a dream that you could, that if you, and you could, if you, when you try and you could.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of critic reviews pointing, saying it's undeniably gorgeous, but its story has no vitality. And that's true. Like, of everything we've seen, and, like, there's a lot of people going, you know, oh, it was amazing and blah, blah, blah. It's like, they're only talking about the visuals. They are not viewing the story. And that's the biggest issue in cinema at the moment for reviews, is we see this a lot. People talk about the visuals and ignore the story. And that's, the story is arguably much more important. If it doesn't make sense, it doesn't matter how pretty it is. So,
unless it makes dollars.
Yeah, even then.
I don't think this did.
No. Oh, no sense and no dollars. Okay.
Yeah, look, I don't see anything on the statistics yet.
I'm surprised because it's been out for a year, like, in Japan. Like, it's been out for a while.
Yeah, US box office is 200 grand. That's pretty low.
It's still better than Melania.
Look, I'm going to be honest, like, getting the flu is better than watching Melania. Like, this is like, just straight up, like, no, like, it's, yeah. Apparently did not do very well in Japan, according to some of the initial information I'm finding here, saying it had a disastrous opening and 2.8 on Film Mark. For reference, Chainsaw Man Reza is on 4.3, Demon Slayer 4.2, and so on. Current occupancy at cinemas was below 5% 3 months ago.
Wow.
So that's pretty bad.
Yeah. The other thing as well, like you mentioned, how people are talking about how, like, beautiful it is, but in Japan they do have a lot of people have an adverse reaction to the use of CG in some of these animations, so I don't think that they would be very keen on this. A lot of reviews didn't even like the animation in Japan, so...
I mean, that kind of makes sense. Like, some of, as you said, some of that CG doesn't look good. Like, this is the thing. Like, CG can be used well, but even when you use it well, not everyone will agree. Like, prime example, the remake of Trigun. I think it looks fantastic. And we've watched, it's probably because we watch a lot of bad CG and see it, that we go, we know what bad CG looks at like. But for the general public, not necessarily everyone watches Trigun and goes, oh yeah, that's good. They just go, it's CG, and immediately recoils from it.
Oh, you mean like Dragon Ball Super Heroes?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly like that. So we are looking at 1.9 million worldwide as the latest figures. We don't have a cost on production, but I imagine it's probably a bit higher than that. Opening weekend was 1.3 million. It's grossed 1.3 million in Japan.
That's crazy.
That's bad. That's really bad considering the cost of production on these shows. And it's 1 hour and 50 minutes, Sony Pictures releasing, so Sony takes a cut. I don't think that's going to do very well. And deservedly so. Like, it doesn't matter how pretty it is. If the story's a mess, then the story's a mess. Alrighty. Well, look, that's the show. No, I'm kidding.
Bye, everybody.
Man, we actually talked a lot on that. So that's Scarlet. It's in cinemas at the moment. I'd suggest if you're interested, wait for digital. Don't waste your money.
Wait for it to hit Crunchy or Netflix or something.
Yeah. As many people are pointing out, at the same time, previous collaborator, the screenwriter for Good Lip Through Time, Summer Wars, and many of his others, Sokoto Okudera, delivered Kokuho earlier this year to critical and commercial success.
What was I just saying?
All about the screenwriting. All about the writing. It's a shame, but it's kind of like we now know where the talent was. Like, he might be able to animate amazingly, but he's not a storyteller. So that's just seems to be what it is. All right, let's move on to something else. Aaron, you've been watching Fate Strange Fake, which is the new Fate franchise's anime series.
So, premise of Fate, it's the Holy Grail War. There's seven masters with seven servants, and they fight to death to try and get the Holy Grail because they need to kill each other to fill it with holy magic so they can make a wish and get whatever they want.
Yep.
This one, set in America. Okay. Not Japan for once.
So, because we've got Fate, Fate Unlimited Blade Works, Fate Grand Order, which is like... all three of these are completely different ways of doing the Holy Grail, I guess, in a way. Except for Unlimited Blade Works, that kind of is a different path in the main visual novel.
So you've got Fate Stay Night,
yep,
which is the main one,
yep,
which is the visual novel. And then you've got Fate Unlimited Blade Works, then you've got Fate Heaven's Feel, and they're all the three different routes from the light novel.
Yep.
Then you've got Fate Zero.
Then
you've got Fate Zero, which comes before that.
Yep.
And then you've got the Fate Grand Order series, which is tied to the Fate Grand Order mobile game.
Yeah.
Then you've also got Dot Hack Extella, which is linked to a different game. You've got...
You're too excited about Dot Hack.
Fate Extella.
Oh, yeah.
Which is linked to...
The Magic Girls one?
No.
No, that's Phantasm.
That's Prisma Ilia.
Prisma Ilia, that's the one, yeah.
Phantasm Carnival is a parody of Stay Night.
So basically the premise of every Fate series is that it's a Holy Grail war, and then depending on the rules and the participants depends on what sort of box it fits into.
It's not even always a Holy Grail war.
No
Extella and a bunch of the ones that are attached to some of the video games are about Magecraft Academy on the moon.
Moon people, Tifa.
They haunt me.
So, Fate Strange Fake is back to the original sort of thing with the Holy Grail War.
Okay, but it's set in America.
And there's a lot of characters from the original Fate Stay Night series popping up again, going, hey, we don't know what's going on here. This is unusual.
So they're kind of tying it to the original storyline as if these characters have completed that story, we don't know the outcome, and then something's happened in the US.
Yes.
Okay.
much later on. Like, the characters that were kids are now adults.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Does that mean they have to choose which one of the lines actually succeeds and is the true timeline?
No.
No?
Oh.
Interesting.
Yeah, because they've managed to make it, like, enough that they can get away with it. And so it's interesting seeing where they go, because they released an OVA for this last year, I believe.
Yeah.
I watched that and I was kind of sitting there going, I don't really get it. Mm. Obviously, because it's like a small snippet of
a full season. Yeah.
And so watching this one, it's interesting seeing the direction they've taken it in, because now there's vampires, which they call dead acolytes, which are apparently on the same level as servants.
Okay.
Yep. And then you've also got a priest who is a cyborg because he comes from an executor clan that was killed by a vampire. So now he's got beef with the vampires.
This feels like we've got Fate and then went and added Mortal Kombat to it.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And of course it's in America, so someone's got some guns.
Well, the fun part is, like, the first part of it is all, like, it's set in a police station where the police are corrupt because the police are also in the Holy Grail War.
Okay, so they're really living up to the strange element of it.
There's a lot of it being set in Vegas with gambling.
I mean, yeah, checks out.
One of the heroic spirits from the previous one's back. Because he wished for immortality.
Oh.
And so he's kind of just come back in and he's like, hello, yes, I am a servant again. I am here to mess things up.
Does that imply that a certain timeline has been chosen?
I don't think so, because I'm pretty sure he got that in most of them.
Oh, okay.
I'm probably very wrong on that. It's been a while.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Okay, cool. But either way, so it's basically setting itself within the world, unlike Fate Go, and then throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Yes. So Fate Go was like more of a historical kind of thing. Like, it's set in those periods. You go to those periods. This is just like present day America.
Yeah. Okay. But you said, because, and this one's not done by UFO Table.
No, this one's A1 Pictures.
Yeah. But you said the animation in episode 3 in particular was pretty exceptional.
The fight, even before the intro sequence. Oh, beautiful.
Okay. Are we talking like UFO Table level of animation?
Yes.
Yeah?
Like, genuinely, I think if you just watch this fight, and you can use that to determine whether or not you want to watch Fate.
Fair enough.
It is such a good fight.
Okay. Well, there you go. So, yeah, that's on Crunchyroll, I believe, at the moment. I've got to pull a retraction in for a show I recommended during our show preview, which is Darwin's Game.
Monkey?
I did say it could go either way. So I found a little bit of historic information around this. So Darwin's Game refers to the monkey character as a human Z, which is like a human who's being crossbred with a chimpanzee. Turns out the Nazis were trying to do that.
Oh.
That's where the term comes from. So Japan has taken that term and acted as if it's a idea. I mean, it is the technical term that's been used, but like, the history that's connected with it makes it even darker. Editing Kyle here. Just realized I incorrectly provided this information here. It wasn't the Nazis. It was indeed a Soviet biologist in the 1920s. While there are historical indications that Nazi Germany was interested in looking into genetic engineering, particularly for soldiers, fortunately, they didn't have the technology required to that form of genetic engineering when it came to crossbreeding humans with animal DNA. So thankfully, I was incorrect on this one and misread the information. Because, the Germans and the Russians were experimenting on human, bioengineering, you will, to try and create someone. And like, that's how we ended up with ligers and tigons and all these other crossbreeds that shouldn't technically work, but do, because on the genetic DNA level, there is enough interplay for it to work. And chimpanzees were apparently a prime candidate for crossbreeding with humans to then, from a genetic standpoint, make a stronger, a stronger, more versatile soldier, but they're not very smart, so that you'd have to train them, and because they have to reduce the size of the brain because of it. That would be one of the results of the DNA crossover. So Darwin's Game kind of doesn't touch on any of this. I actually found this out completely accidentally while watching a YouTube video on, like, you know, weird things Russia and Germany did during World War II. Like, you know, 40 things you didn't know about.
Completely
unrelated.
Yeah, completely
to it.
Unrelated.
Like, you sit there doom scrolling it, and I go, like, oh no.
Yeah, right. So, like, I don't think the idea behind it is necessarily like, you know, it's got nothing to do with like Nazis or anything like that in the show
that we've seen yet.
That well, yeah. There are concerns. There are concerns about the way that they are showing the main character and the main lead interacting.
Ooh. I think I've seen these clips.
Yeah. Because of that, I dropped it pretty hard. I wasn't finding it that interesting to start with. Like, watching it was kind of a bit like, this is really dumb. Like, there are much better ways to tell this story than the way you have. You have gone for the laziest, most silly way possible, and it doesn't make a lot of sense. And I got to episode 3 and I was just like, I can't. I don't want to watch this. Just because it's poorly told. Animation's not bad, but not amazing. And the overarching story is just kind of like, I can see where this is going. It's very telegraphed. It's, oh, the people who broke him out of the bioengineering place are now trying to... They're a terrorist organization now, and they're trying to do other things. He's going to appear in the world. They're going to try and recruit him. He wants to take them down from the inside. The reasons for that are completely unclear, seeing as they're the ones who rescued him, technically. It's poorly explained and, like... It's based on a manga, and apparently the manga's quite good, but I think they've just completely missed the mark on this. So, yeah, I'd say wait until the season finishes and we get some good reviews from people who've watched the whole thing to give us some context on it, but take it with a pinch of salt because it's just awkward. It's just really... Every single character in it doesn't feel like they're talking to each other, more like they're stating lines a little bit, and the lines aren't really telling us much. So
I was hopeful because it looked like it was trying to invoke some deep thought with like existentialism and what makes man man.
Yeah, like, it's very lightweight existentialism, like very like just skin deep, like it's shallow.
So like a party chat about existentialism, just like, oh yeah. Do you think we have souls?
Yeah, maybe man. Like, you know, so yeah, it's not great. Like there is better shows out there. And if you're a furry, well, Beastars is back this month, so start of March. Brandon's not a fairy. He's into G.I. Joe. If you're watching or reading something interesting, let us know. I've been smashing out, what was it called, A Golden Kamuy. I'm halfway through and I can't believe we're still going on in a good way. Like, it's great. There's a lot of new manga that's starting up at the moment. So if you find something interesting you think we'd like, drop in the comments. We'd love to know about it. We love to chat about it.
Jujutsu Kaisen, the alien one.
Oh, the sequel?
Yes. Have you been reading it?
Did it get better?
I'm not up to date, but I saw stuff. I've seen stuff.
Well, we'll stay spoiler free. There is a sequel to Jujutsu Kaisen, and it's like 100 years later or something, and there's moon people.
The creator saw Boruto and went, huh.
I can do this better. Oh, no. Anyway, we'll be back in a moment. We got to talk about some Valentine's Day anime. Wi-Fi Radio.
Hey, I got you something.
Ooh, that's a little... spicy.
Yeah, but the Patreon members are gonna love it. Doki doki no
wakwaku. Valentine's anime.
All right, now we don't know what's actually playing right now because I haven't made the sting for it.
But it's wasps. So many wasps.
So many wasps. Sting and everything. We're gonna talk about Agent Aker from 1997. So. Look, firstly, I'm sorry. I was wrong. This is really
bad.
That's
twice this episode.
It's really bad.
That's twice. Look,
I remember seeing this like 15 years ago because the prequels were being released and thinking, oh, if it's a series from that old, you know, it's probably got some history behind it. It's a lot. So, getting it out of the way, this is not a show for kids, but it is also not chicken formal wear. It is a fan service, panty-driven show. The official synopsis doesn't really cover enough. So a catastrophic earthquake has left Tokyo and most of the Earth, for that matter, under the ocean. Aika is a salvager who retrieves various remains from the watery ruins, and when she accepts the dangerous mission of locating and obtaining the mysterious Lagu, she discovers she's not the only one after it. That doesn't cover anything.
See, I wish they had focused more on the underwater salvaging stuff.
Right?
Like, that would have been such a cool series.
Yeah, right. Like,
and they could have done, like, all these bikini shots.
Yeah, this is true. They're meant to be, like, a salvage agent, but it's just... It's panty shot after panty shot to the point that you get desensitized after one episode.
But it feels like there's so many that it's just like a comedy of them. Like, it doesn't feel like it's, you know, usually when you watch an anime and they have those fan service-y shots and you're like, oh yeah, that's the fan service shot. What? You're watching this and you're just like, okay.
There's another. There's another.
Like when you eat the same food for like a month every night and you're like, yeah, okay, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, so, sorry, Tifa, go ahead.
I was going to say there are some very strategically done shots as well where it's like she's situated a certain way and the other chick's situated a certain way, but she doesn't have, she's got like a strapless top and obviously it just like her head is in a certain place.
Yeah. There is like, a lot of implications. Is probably the best way to explain it.
My favorite one is the one that's under the grate for no purpose.
Yeah.
And you're looking up at the panties.
Oh my god.
And there's nobody in the grate. There's like, it's like just floor under the grate.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, we need to look at these panties. And it's like,
but do we though?
There's no movement. There's no animation. It's just a screen of panties for like 2 minutes.
Yeah. It's like they're having a conversation. It's like they're having a conversation. Let's just put the camera in the most weird position possible.
Like, if it was a character spying on them from underneath the grates.
It'd make sense.
I don't understand that.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not.
But it's not.
It's really not.
the synopsis is so wrong. It's this girl has to take on this guy who wants to destroy the world and restart it with his harem of army ladies.
Yeah.
That's a better description.
It's Epstein.
Except none of them are underage.
This is true. So here is what the, shall we say, audience have written as the actual story it. Following a catastrophic earthquake 20 years prior, Tokyo, along with the world, has sunk into the ocean during a large-scale land subsidence. Aika is a salvage agent, a person who digs up submerged artifacts from the cities below. All this is still accurate. She works for a small company run by Gozo and takes a fairly dangerous job. In the first story, she and Gozo's daughter Rion search for a material called the Lagu. However, they are captured by Rudolf Hagen, an effeminate in this case, but oversexed man who wants to use the Lagu to transform the world, destroying its inhabitants and replacing them with an army of young women called Delmo Corporation, who will carry his progeny. Alongside him is his obsessive sister, Nina, who is jealous of Aika when Rudolf desires to have her for himself. Aika has a special bustier that, when activated, transforms into a battle bikini that gives her extraordinary fighting powers and prowess. Following the defeat of the Huggins, the Delmo Corporation girls seek other methods to foil Aika in the following episodic stories. Yeah.
Yeah, no, look. When they created the rival to the battle bikini, the battle panties or whatever you want to call them, that was cool. I was like, awesome. We're getting some progress. We're getting some, like, actual competition. And then that fizzled out real fast.
It is.
And then no one else could hold that level.
Yeah. It's episodic panty shots. That's what you are watching.
Yeah,
It is fan service disguised as a story.
With but a girl like... who goes from pale to tan, if you're into that. I know why you got us to watch this.
No, I didn't realize that happened. I forgot.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, sorry, T, for interrupting you.
It's just like, it's not even, I don't know if you can really even call it like fan service-y anymore because you just get to a certain point. It's like, at least with Kill la Kill, like that's a good story.
Right?
You're just like, okay, I guess I'm just watching this now.
They put more effort into Kill la Kill. Like, there's jiggle, there's dynamics, there's like action. This is just
stuff happening.
Here's panties.
And here's some other panties.
Yep.
And some more panties.
They all look exactly the same.
So yep. The reason I discovered this show was the anime music video compilations, AMV Hell. And do you remember where there's the song Battling Banjos from Deliverance, like, din-din-din-din-din-din-din-din, and, you know, the two banjos going against each other. And then Family Guy did a version of it with farts.
Yes.
They used all the panty shots for each fart.
Oh.
Was that...
That's Agent Daker.
That's just from that show.
That's just from the prequel.
Oh, my God.
So that's how I discovered Agent Daker. So that would have been, 15 years ago, 2007, 2009.
2027. Next year.
In the future.
Years ago.
The year 2000. And that's how I discovered it. And I'm like, this can't seriously be that bad. And it is.
It's worse.
The prequels are worse. Than the original.
I skipped the prequels.
Good. Good.
Yeah. I ran out of time.
The prequels have better story and more panty shots. It doesn't work.
Can we just get the box of Captain Crunch that's Oops All Berries, but it's Oops All Panty Shots?
I kind of want to make that now.
Here you go, guys.
But look,
YouTube only.
Look, there are some interesting reviews for this. So Todd Douglas Jr. of DVD Talk. I don't know if that site even exists anymore. I could click this button to find out, but I won't.
It's probably viruses now.
Likened Aker's transformation to that in Cutie Honey and called the series the epitome of a guilty pleasure anime. I'm a fight you, Todd.
I mean,
this
he's
is
guilty
nothing
about
pleasurable.
It. It's guilty pleasure. Yeah. So, like...
yeah. If you found pleasure in this, you should feel guilty.
Yeah.
He's like... using the term correctly.
He is using the term correctly, but I like the I refuse to use the term guilty pleasure because there's a great quote by Dave Grohl. It's like, I don't believe in guilty pleasures. I feel you should like what you like and like it and not feel, you know, saddened about that. And then he goes on to obviously say, obviously, if you're into stuff that would put you on a certain list, you know, he's like, as a general rule, like, people use the term guilty pleasures for something like, oh, this Cornetto is my guilty pleasure. And it's like, no, it's not. It ain't. You ain't guilty on it. You just like Cornettos. Like,
yeah.
You know, that's the wrong use of the term. This is the correct term of use of it. You should feel bad about watching this. 100%. We did. So he found... Todd found
Kenny's
the show to be...
here.
Yeah. Look, Kenny said, I don't want to talk about this. And I'm like, that's fair. And then I was like, can I convince you to come in for it? And he's like, no. I'm like, look, valid. So Todd Douglas found the show to be solid looking. And considering the year it was in, 97, yep, the artwork for technology and stuff like that looks really well done. The character
fantastic.
Designs are pretty good. You know, fantastic animation and character designs. But regards to the audio, he thought the Japanese cast did a much better job with the material than the English cast, writing the latter was particularly bland and didn't maintain the necessary spark for this kind of show. And he's not wrong. The English dub sounds like they're reading lines.
Well,
without
they
context.
Probably were.
Dubs back then, especially for this kind of content, they did not have quality actors.
They did not.
Like, they probably got actual porn actresses in to read lines off of them. They probably were on Craigslist.
Did Craigslist success
actually.
In the 90s?
Yes.
No. It did.
I think it did.
97?
Like, I think this was mentioned on
95
Friends.
Was internet, wasn't it?
Wasn't Friends...
Hang on. When did...
Internet
when
history
was
time.
Craigslist?
Maybe it was like 2001. I don't know.
Yeah. Craig's school opened in 1975. Doesn't help us.
Fantastic.
Craigslist, 2000. Yeah, you're right. It was very early internet.
Okay,
but
see?
That's still after this. So I
is.
Guess it would have been...
A newspaper,
newspaper ad. Though,
well,
when was the dub done?
Yeah, they might have... That's so true, actually.
The dub might have come many moons later.
Otherwise, I was going to say they probably just got people they knew to read the lines on the day or something. Mm.
Like, Stacey from accounting's available, right?
Yeah.
So, release period of this was staggered. So, the first four episodes were released from 1997 April to January 1998. So, that's obviously a bit different because I guess that's one per quarter. And then the next three episodes were released from August 1998 to April 1999. So we're getting close to 2000 for a digital release. It didn't have a broadcast release internationally. So I wouldn't be surprised if they did use Craigslist in 2000s to do the dub. so there you go. Solutions. We found answers.
fun Craigslist fact.
Yeah.
That's how they found the cake fart girl.
The what? I don't want to know, do I? I do not want to know. Moving right along. It was Animo was initially licensed by Central Park Media, but later licensed by Bandai Entertainment, and I believe the Bandai dub is the latter. So, it may have used Craigslist. that's what we're discussing, by the way.
Complete tangent from the show, which is actually more interesting than the show.
I mean, look, it is. I've found the list. It was recorded between 1999 and 2001. So there you go. By Sky High Productions for part 1 to 4 and then Audio Mixes for 5 to 7. Yeah, Sky High, not related to the film of the same name.
What about the hero from Tiger and Bunny?
No. This predates all of them. It's... Yeah, it's not good. I'm looking at the names and I'm like, none of these people have done anything since, have they? Half of them don't have entries for their as a dub actor. Deborah Rabai did Aika and she's done a lot of dubbing and a lot of it is...
not great.
A lot of it is adjacent. Iki Tucson, Queensblend. Right. Genshiken, so I'm getting Gravitation.
She got into the industry and she just kind of stuck there.
Yeah, Pat Labor.
That's very different.
Yeah, right. Not much. I think she keeps getting brought back for Queensblade. And she does Lena, who's the main lead of Queensblade. I could see her not being very good early on. Like, not saying she's bad now, but I can see, like, that being one of her first things to do. Maybe not so great.
Nobody starts anything great.
No. I mean, look at this podcast. It started out very rough, and right now it's still very rough.
It's a diamond. We're polishing it. We'll get there.
It's a diamond? Oh, okay. this is a... it's a weird show. I don't think we can recommend it. Actually, I straight up can't recommend it because it's bad. there is a reason this is not very highly rated.
Watch an episode.
Yeah. If you want to experience it.
One.
I'm
it's
not saying...
It's available for free online on Tubi.
Yeah.
You just need to watch one episode. Once you've watched one episode, you know the
exactly what you're
yeah,
in for.
Yeah. Right.
That's it. You're good. You're good. You can just skip the rest.
So I'd like to make a point that is on 5.97 on IMDb. Not on IMDb, sorry, on my anime list.
Is that lower than the one we mentioned in the pre-show?
It is.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. for those unaware, on the Patreon we have a pre-show where we talk about other stuff that we can't necessarily talk about in the show, and we did a double pre-show this week because we had to talk about a show Aaron went to watch as a contender for this series, which is straight up Chicken Formal Wear, and it's higher rated than this.
It's so bad.
How many people have rated each one? Is there more people that have rated this one and that's why?
Yeah. The adult content one has 1,000 ratings. That's on a 5.6, not a 6.5. And this is on a 5.9, but that's still alarmingly close.
Incredibly.
Yeah. The studio who did this was Studio Fantasy, and not spelt properly.
like the
soft drink out of ocean?
Yeah. They did F-A-N-T-A-S-I-A. Fantasia. Hang on, I must have written it wrong then. That's on me. I wrote it wrong. Yes, like Mickey Mouse. They started in 1983 and were dissolved in 2016. The shows that they have on there tend to be towards this, but then they've also got some Chicken Formal Wear. Oh, Yeah, I don't know. It's there is. Oh wow, looking at this list, there is some stuff that I need to make sure this isn't on camera because we'll get monetized. there's just, you know, that's just straight up that. Yeah,
there is a nice sensor bar though.
It's not enough. You can see exactly what's going on. There's even more of it as we go down.
Yeah, but like you can't see anything.
Yeah. All of the Acre series. So the original Acre that we're talking about, the prequel R16 Virgin Mission is on a 5.88, and Acre Zero is on a 5.86. So you can tell that these were not, shall we say, well received. There is also a special episode which is rated lower than all of them on a 5.6.
Ooh.
So yeah, look, the content here of this studio, I can understand why they potentially went under because none of it is particularly good. The highest rated one that they did was Gunbuster Volume 2, and that was done in association with Tokushinsha Film Corporation. And they were a company that were one of the producers for Spirited Away. And Look Back. So there you go. Oh. So they're still around. These guys ain't. For valid reasons. Like Gunbusters is quite good as like a concept and a story. And it's got a beloved franchise to a lot of people from the older sort of like... What was the production company that went under that had Neon Genesis and all that? Not Gainax, but the American one. It was like DVA or ADV. These are all shows that were popular and sold by ADV, who did like the translations for them. And, you know, those were pretty well rated. Everything else on here looks pretty bad. Like, it's pretty bad. Like, there's no saving it. this is why they were dissolved. So, yeah, look... if you want to watch it, Tubi TV at your own discretion.
Preferably without anyone else around you. Do not want them knowing that you've seen this.
It's awkward. It is weird. It is a time capsule of things back then. And I wouldn't necessarily say it is worth your time. Like some of the other series that we mentioned on our list for... Hall of Fame in the awards would be a better use of your time, including even the more mature ones such as Monster Musume and Prison School, which was another contender for this episode. And I think there was a third one as well there, which is kind of more etchy, adult related content. This ain't it. Like, soz. But this is a warning.
On this show, we're not always going to pick great shows to review.
But
this is exactly a good example of that.
And look, yeah. That's the point as well. Because we're independent, we can review these shows and tell you what we honestly think about them.
And if Aaron says it's bad.
I'm like, no offense to your taste, but you are a lot more forgiving than the rest of us. And if even you're saying it's bad... Ooh. So, yeah. If someone wants to take the concept of all the sea levels rise and people are now salvaging things from old buildings and make it into an amazing series of an underground buried technology that could save the world, do it. That would be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't do it like this.
You can still make it etchy, though. Make it etchy.
Yeah, but it'd be good that way because it'd be modern etchy, not...
Yeah.
This. And it's a shame because, like, you hope when you look at some of the ones that are well known from, like, the 90s and the 80s, you'd hope that they actually were of a good quality. And, you know, there's a lot of hidden gems of shows in there or, you know, single OVA productions and stuff like that that we all hope would be really good. This just ain't it. Like,
it's got a cool character cameo in it, though.
I mean, yeah. Copyright wasn't a big deal back then. So Oscar from Neon Genesis just shows up randomly.
In the change room.
In the change room, yeah. Which, ironically, this was around the same time Evangelion was airing when that episode aired. So they straight up saw, oh, she's popular, let's put her in. And yeah. Next time, we'll tell you about Burn Up, which is just a massive ripoff of all shows from the 80s that is etchy and better than this. Still not good. Maybe we'll do that on Patreon.
I was going to say, we're already doing next year's Valentine's episode.
These scheduling conflicts have made us plan ahead.
Not that far ahead, thankfully. So this guy's the director who also did Project Aiko, which was in the 80s. Megami Paradise, which is weird. It was based on a visual novel. The Sailor Victory, which is really, honestly, like, all of these are pretty bad. Now that I'm looking at the list and thinking about the ones that I've seen, like, there's Nojika Blix Tactics, which was in 2001, and that was pretty bad.
Isn't it?
It's validly so. It's the same thing. Yep. It's just that they're secret agents. So, like, I'll pop that on the screen for people to look at.
I was kind of hoping Agent Aika, with the title, like, Agent Aika,
yeah,
would be secret agent-y.
There's a reason that they dropped the agent part and just refer to the franchise as Aika now. It's because there's not much agent-y stuff. The prequels have more agent stuff in it, but it doesn't make a lot of sense considering where the world ends up. there is also, like, chicken formal wear called Office Lingerie, which is also just known as Lingeries, and that is kind of, if it hits, if it ticks your boxes, this will be for you. Otherwise, it won't be, if that makes sense. And then there's a heap of other ones, and it's all the same thing, really. It's girls in short skirts with panty shots, for the most part. There's, like, G-taste.
See, normally I'd be like, yeah, you know, I'm down, I'd give that a crack. But after watching this, I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah. So the G in G-taste is used symbolically as the letter between F for fetish and H for chicken formal wear.
Huh.
Yeah. So that's exactly what it sounds like it is. So, look.
They think they're being clever, but they're not.
Yeah, this was in 2010. It's not even clever in 2010.
Oh,
like, we're 16 years from there and we're still going, that's lame. It hasn't gotten cool. So, look.
Stop trying to make fetch happen.
So, yeah. If Nishijima Katsuhiko is the director of a show you're considering, I highly recommend checking the reviews and getting a good understanding of it. I will find the sequence that put me onto this with the silly panty shots, and I'll share that in the comments section or in the episode description for you, along with all of our links. And that will give you something you can then go, wow, that was a thing.
That clip is better than this entire show.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. I'd say it's even better than this episode of the podcast. Like, I'm kidding. I'm taking the mic. You know that. But it's like, yeah, it's a big improvement. The soundtrack in particular makes it great. But that's unfortunately our my mistake for this episode, and I do apologize.
Kyle's not allowed to choose Valentine's episodes anymore.
Look, I can choose some stuff. But it would have to be all the way on the Patreon, because it doesn't even fit into, like, the M ranking that we give this. Like, it's too much.
Goodness. See, I said we should just do prison school.
Stuff I've seen that I could talk about on just the Patreon. Oh, my goodness.
I think we might have to just start doing some adult content for the Patreon exclusively, because there's a lot of stuff that's come up where the show's actually good, but the content within is far too mature for our rating. So that's where I think it has to go. And that's something we're going to have to do. There will be more Patreon content this year anyway. So, yeah. But, yep, that's that. We'll be back in a moment. Kawaii-Fi Radio.
Tonight on Anime Communique.
Great story. Compelling and rich.
Nothing brings ratings up like a little controversy.
We can just do, you know, Wi-Fi red.
Wi-Fi black.
God.
I mean, the standard logo is already red.
Yeah,
it is.
So may as well change it.
Wi-Fi XL.
Only XL.
Extra large, larger than life.
Extra latte.
I saw a really dumb drawing someone shared on one of the anime and manga groups on Facebook, and it's like, you know the scene of the manga of Death Note where L goes behind Kira and says, "I'm L," to him. Someone's redrawn it where it's like, "I'm 5XL and he's huge."
Oh,
and it's just like, and it's all like, "This is what happens when you eat as many sweets as I do."
Oh,
so yeah, it's silly. But it gave me a good chuckle.
That is a good chuckle. Did you see that Doraemon's undone a bunch of trauma for all of us?
I think that's just brought trauma back to the front for people. Let's be honest here.
I felt better after it.
Yeah, like you did share it to the group, but I get it.
It's nice. It's a happy ending.
It is trying to do happy endings. I do appreciate that. But like, I would rather it just be gone. So
by fixing it makes it go away.
I guess. No. I haven't looked at it. I just am aware. I saw the Chimera and I went, nope.
He sprays it with like some unfusing spray and then they come out and then they're happy and they hug.
And then meld back together?
No.
Okay, good. Like, I'm too used to people like pranking me with stuff online.
I'm pretty sure it was an official Doraemon thing as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, yeah. It was an official thing. All right, look. Yeah, first, this is the first episode of us trying a bit of a new format with less news and more interaction. But the first thing we do need to talk about is the controversy, which wasn't Doraemon fixing things. Crunchyroll's increased its subscription prices for all tiers in the US. There is suspicion this is going to also extend to international. Fan tier has gone from $8 to $10 a month. Mega tier has gone from 12 to 14. And the ultimate has gone from 16 to 18. That comes into effect on March 4th. So, yeah, the fan tier also now allows users to download content for offline viewing on one device, and all ad-based viewing is gone. So that's done. The fan tier has no advertisements, and all new simulcast episodes will be available to users as they premiere. There is absolutely no free content anymore on Crunchyroll. So, yeah, that's it's. We knew it was coming. It's just very typical. So...
Well, yeah. Also, it is time for their annual price hike.
Yeah, it is.
Like, every year they do this.
Yeah. I mean...
It's not news anymore. It's just...
It's expected.
Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't Crunchyroll start off as a pirating site as well?
Yes, they did.
So is this not just ironic as heck?
Yeah, because they are actually driving people to go back to piracy because the prices are unaffordable. And if you... Like, this is the thing. Like, it's very rare that price is the barrier... for piracy. It's normally availability that leads to piracy. And this has been studied to death. However, in the world of streaming, it is now becoming price, and it being an unattainable price for people on lower incomes or people who are struggling to attain. Stuff that would previously have been on free-to-air TV is now being literally locked behind a subscription. So,
well, I think it is still the availability because it's not available on all streaming platforms, and you have to get all streaming platforms in order to access everything.
Oh, I mean, this is true, but it's like it's outside of availability. It's adding a barrier to entry.
Well, yeah, that's what's stopping you from having the availability because, like, if it was just one streaming service with everything...
We wouldn't trust them, though.
Well, you wouldn't have that high price of having to pay for everything.
Oh, I don't know. If we can say anything from what we've seen of corporations over the last 5 years, that if they got the monopoly, they would high price everything.
Amazon.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, let's... we'll take it with a grain of salt, but, like, if they keep... Like, if Crunchyroll's mega tier was $10 US a month, people would consider it for the mega tier. If it's $5 for the fan tier, that's a no-brainer. The moment you move into double digits, you've lost it. People are not going to do it. And especially with every other streaming service hiking their prices, you're just going to start losing people, and that's just going to lead to more price hikes to keep the price happy. Here's the solution. Stop giving bonuses to your CEOs. They get paid enough as it is. All right.
Eat the rich.
Yeah. Yeah. Preferably with barbecue sauce because they'll be gamey. Like, anyway, moving on and staying away from cannibalism. Aaron, so you have you found out one of your favorite franchises is returning. Dot Hack have announced an event that for the 30th anniversary. What's going on?
Okay, so they have announced Dot Hack Zero, which is a brand new video game in the Dot Hack series.
Okay.
It doesn't have any ties to any other stories. It's not a continuation. It's not a remake. It's an entirely new thing on its own.
So standalone story, same concept, new universe.
Yes, so it's the same world, and it's The World, which is the name of the VR game that they play in.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously it's a newer version of that. There's... Dot Hack, as much as I love it, suffers from the same thing as Fate with Saberface.
All the characters look the same?
All the characters look the same. And like in a few series they kind of explained it, like, oh yeah, you know, character models, you've got limitations, and then they're like, oh, this was a prize for winning a competition, you get to look like this character that's very famous. And then it's just, it's become, this is the
norm.
This is Saber.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kite is in everything now.
Mm-hmm.
So same sort of thing as like Overwatch, where it's like, you know, Overwatch 2 / Overwatch New has all the same character faces, and then they you just swap the hair and it's, it's Tracer. That, now it's DVA. And it's
so the last thing we got for Dot Hack was Dot Hack Quantum.
Mm.
And that was fun. That was like a 3-part anime series, I believe.
Yeah.
Which was good, but it didn't really satisfy the scratch. There's a certain thing about the games, because it's the way they simulate an online game without it being online is really like the characters feel real. They feel like they're real people playing a game that you're interacting with. They can go up and trade with just anyone in town and they've got like certain needs that need to be met in order to trade for that item. And it's like, this is what it feels like trading with people in like an online game.
Yeah, like so if you're playing World of Warcraft and you put something in the trade channel, I need someone who can enchant this weapon for me. What do you want in return sort of thing?
Oh no, you legit walk up to the person, go trade, and then it gives you a menu with all of their items in their inventory. And you select what you want, and then you select what you are offering, and then they've got like this bar that you've got to fill for satisfaction.
Okay. All right. Well, not exactly how I thought an online thing would do, but yeah. But I get what you mean. Like, it's providing a sense of progression where you build a relationship with those characters.
And like the whole time while playing the standard Dot Hack games, there's like news of what's going on in the outside world, and like how what you're doing in the game is impacting the outside world. And, like, then it's reflected in the game, like, people will stop playing or, like, the game will deteriorate. And it's so good how they do their world building. And I'm excited to see where they go with this one.
Mm.
I am concerned about the use of the name Zero, because they did release a light novel with the name Zero, like, 20 years ago.
Oh.
So the main character on the light novel looks nothing like any of the characters in this trailer that we've seen.
So, CyberConnect 2, who is producing it, say the game will be a novel RPG experience that blends the series' trademark duality of fantasy, game world, and reality with modern expectations infused with 100% pure CyberConnect 2 spirit. I don't know what that means.
Well, so previously all the games were CyberConnect 2 and Bandai Namco. They've dropped Bandai Namco, please.
Oh, that... Okay. Yep, that makes sense. Just having a look at some of the stuff. And CyberConnect 2 have been involved in anime projects as well. So that means there could, if it is successful, there could potentially be an anime series connected with it.
Yes. Well, they've also done the Naruto Ultimate Ninja games. Like, they're very prolific. There's a lot of anime games out there with their name on it.
Yeah. CyberConnect 2, as part of the 30th anniversary, is holding exhibits in all 47 prefectures of Japan as part of a fan meeting event as well in 8 cities. So yeah, pretty cool. Like, they're really, they're not doing this by shorts. Just like,
oh, that's ticket price. Like,
I mean, I think Justo was having a sale.
ANA was having a sale. ANA's always having a sale. It's just getting it at the right time. Yeah. But yeah, so look, this is going to be interesting. As you said, the house has been in-house publishing and work is going to be all done with permission from Bandai Namco Entertainment. Bandai's not involved in the production of it. So hopefully this will mean something good. And hopefully that leads to more anime for it. For those who aren't aware of Dot Hack predates like, what do you call it? Sword Art Online, Log Horizon.
It's the original like VR MMO video game. You're stuck in the game.
Yeah. So like this is where that idea kind of became well known, if you will. Like, there are ones that predate this as well, but they're kind of either lesser known, not well produced, or had a very small audience to them. So yeah. Anyway, let's move on from there over to Tifa. She's got an update for us because some of the anime are taking a break. And it's to do with something that happens every 4 years in snow. So yes, what is
there
it?
Not the moon people. There is the Olympics, the Winter Olympics, which is happening at the moment. So because of the broadcast schedule in Japan, various animes will not be airing this time round. So that includes Frieren and Jujutsu Kaisen. So like really popular ones are just off the air. So everything's been delayed back another week.
A week, yeah. Yeah, it's frustrating because you'd think with something that popular that they would then just like move it to a different slot. But I guess maybe that was part of the agreement that they had with the studios when they did the licensing.
Yeah, maybe. And to be honest, considering how we learned that, you know, MAPPA, for example, still adhere to the kind of old style of animating to up until their release, essentially, which we saw with the last season of Jujutsu Kaisen, where we had issues with certain animation and the deadlines they had to meet, which was later fixed when the actual DVDs and stuff were released. Maybe at least it gives them an extra week on the work that they're doing. But
I'm trying to think of which episode would be next, because they've kind of been a little bit all over the place sorting out some of the backstory stuff. And it's like, okay, would that give them an extra week to do a fight scene? Because if so, that could be really good. Like, that could be really useful. Mm. All right. Moving on from Anime on Hiatus, we've had a major, and this did happen, about 2 weeks ago, but obviously because of our delays, we haven't had a chance to talk about it. Batto.to has shut down. It was a major manga and manhwa piracy site, has been claimed. It's just where all the... Well, actually, no, it wasn't just that. It for fan subs, well, fan translations and scanlators, there were people uploading the full one, but Batto was normally pretty good about taking down the official ones from their site, so or when they got licensed, taking them down. And you know, it made sense, but a man in China has been detained, there's apparently this guy was apparently admitting to operating 60 related sites to Batto. So not just Batto, but 60 sites. So this is the first kind of major, major bust that we've seen with Japan's CODA, the Content Overseas Distribution Association, that's trying to reduce worldwide piracy and promote international distribution of Japanese content. As always, they're doing this without considering the impact that that will actually have on the, you know, the series that come out, because a lot of the time scanlators, so people who take the raws and translate them themselves, which is not illegal, but it is a gray area. They're the ones who help build interest around a series or a franchise. And without that, some shows will not make the level, get to the level of interest that they otherwise would if it wasn't for that community who was finding them and sharing them. Now, just to be clear, they haven't charged any scanlators. They've just charged the man who is allegedly the key role of operating Batto. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, because this has been a cross-government sting with the Japanese and Chinese government working together on it. We will kind of know more about this in the future, but all 60 sites were shut down, apparently. They continued operating after the suspect was detained in November, but by January 19, all the sites had been shut down. There are a few other related sites that you might notice have shut down. There's a lot of social media accounts that have been shut down from the associated groups who were doing it. They're basically saying that these sites illegally distributed Japanese manga, Korean manhwa, and Chinese manhwa, and distributed the work translated into more than 50 languages, including English. Here's the thing. Most of those people don't translate it. As in, like, Korean manhwa, it's not translated into Spanish. Fans do that. Like, it's... Yeah. So they're going after the hosts rather than the translators, is what I'm saying. So this is going to probably cause some major issues to do with anime in the future, with how they are shared and promoted, because like there's a lot of series which, if they fall out of grace or just aren't massively popular, they will never see the light of day outside of Japan. And international support can sometimes be what changes that thing. A prime example was Love Bullet, which is currently, its Japanese sales aren't very strong. Its international sales, even though it's not translated into English officially, are huge now, because the translators who were translating it helped as soon as the first volume was published and helped tell people how to vote for it to show their interest in it by literally putting full guides in at the end. So well that it's done that it's now actually being picked up by Seven Seas, I believe.
Oh, dang.
So, and it had no footprint prior to that. And if it wasn't for them pushing it and making sure it gets noticed and like let them know that there's an international audience, it would have probably got cancelled after its first volume. And that's what it looked like based on the sales numbers. Because literally the author was like, please make sure you go out and buy it. Like, it's not doing as well as we'd hoped. And it's like, if that international community hadn't been there translating it, it'd be gone. So yeah, it's a double-sided sword here. Like, you know, and I'm going to be blunt. If people can't afford to read your content, they won't. They just straight up won't. And if it's not an issue, as we said with piracy before, it's not an issue of cost, it's availability. And people who pirate will just keep pirating. It's not going to change anything. So, you know, they would just find another way. You're not going to stop them. Like, it's better for business to let them do it and monitor it to make sure it's not, you know, infringing too heavily. But to go after the full sites to stop them is actually going to negatively influence those Japanese mangaka. So, yeah. Man, I got my soapbox twice about piracy today. What's going on? all right, let's move on from that to some fantastic news. Dragon Ball's back.
Yes, Galactic Patrol arc.
Yes. This is based on the Dragon Ball Super manga, which isn't written by Akira Toriyama, but was advised on. So similar to how GT was advised of by Akira Toriyama. Because he kind of like would come back and help with things, like it was meant to adapt all of Super, and then they got past that and they went, what now? And he's like, yeah, do what you want. And he's like, okay, cool. And then obviously Akira Toriyama, we lost him a couple of years back, and he was giving them the go-ahead to, yeah, turn it in. So we're getting two series. I actually thought it was a film and a series, but it's now been confirmed as two series. So they're redoing Dragon Ball Super Beerus's arc because of how poorly it was animated in the original one. So that's coming out.
Have you seen that clip that's like Beerus's face in the distance and it's just the dots?
Yeah, it's so bad. Yeah. So it's part of the 40th anniversary event. It's going to air in fall in Japan, which means that'll be last quarter of the year. And then we've got the Super arc for the Galactic Patrol arc, and that's apparently not got a date.
I'll take it.
So yeah, we don't know when it's coming out officially at this point, but the understanding is that they want to release the Galactic Patrol arc after they've done Beerus, because originally people thought it was going to be a film. They're like, yeah, people go see the film, get reacquainted with Beerus and the story, and then go and watch the Galactic Patrol arc. It's just made me want to go back and read it, because yeah, I never read the Super manga.
Oh.
So yeah, I was just like, well, if it's, you know, if following the what was done in the TV series and the films, and there's not much to it.
Well, kind of out of order.
Yeah.
Like, Superhero was only recent in the manga, whereas the Galactic Patrol arc was a fair while ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, in the story, in like the actual timeline, it's meant to be set about a year after the Broly film. So, yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, so this is going to be interesting. It's part of the 40th anniversary event for Dragon Ball. We're hoping this means that, you know, even though the creator has passed on, just like with Monkey Punch with Lupin, the stories will continue. And, you know, the series will continue until morale improves. So
Dragon Ball's never going to die.
Yeah.
It's going to keep getting wished back.
That's a good one. I mean, it's too big of a franchise not to look after, so.
And do you know how many Dragon Balls they've sold?
7?
Yes.
Anyway, but yeah, that's it for the news. The main thing, one other thing to mention, live actions are incoming. Netflix is on board to distribute a live-action Gundam film, and live-action One Piece Season 2 is getting very close. So we'll be telling you more about that when it does happen. We'll be back in a sec.
Wi-Fi Radio. Tired of this.
I've been informed that Tifa and Aaron are tired of my nonsense. That's where we're going to leave things for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Next time, a movie. That's it. It's a movie. We'll be discussing.
Not the B movie.
No.
A movie.
Yeah. This will be better than that. It'll be. Yeah. It won't be Scarlet. so there you go. We'll figure out what we're going to watch and let you know. It's just kind of been a lot of moving parts and trying to figure out what fits in with the time frame. As always, big thank you to our Patreon members for their support. And if you want more content, details are in the description below for you to find out where you can access all of our platforms. That's it. We'll be back a little sooner, in about a week's time, with the next episode, which is a movie.
Did
we mention it's a movie?
A movie?
Yeah. As you said, not the B movie, only the A movie.
So we're not doing an episode, we're doing a movie?
Yes.
Whoa.
Did we get the budget for that?
We're doing an OVA, so we have no budget. that's where we're going to leave things. You've been listening to Wi-Fi Radio. Thank you for joining us. And until next time, watch some anime. Now we really need to think about what film to watch.